PFT Media.
All episodes of The Experience with Chris Fio were recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic.
This is The Experience with Chris Fio. In each episode, Fio brings his unique and unashamed interview style to Central Florida. He conducts honest and open interviews with people that have the vocabulary and expertise that he lacks.
In this episode, I get to talk with Steve Etchie. Etchie is one of the founders of PFT Media, the company that releases this show, as well as many other wonderful podcasts and web series. Etchie and I talk about many interesting things, including his recent trip to China and his experiences with the growing Orlando podcast community.
Gunning a holster, that vision is slipping like a worn transmission. The days of transporting and not transmitting, cause the transcontinental flow got me transient.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. Today I have with me Steve Etchie of PFT Media. How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm doing awesome.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, man. How's your day been so far?
It's been pretty good. I got to do nothing.
Really?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And a whole lot of nothing is good when you do a whole lot of somethings.
Exactly.
Yeah, and what type of somethings do you do, Etch?
Mostly like podcasting. I do some video editing. Myself and Chris Crespo are the owners of PFT. We started, and I pretty much video editing and podcast editing and producing and
all. We'll tackle all four of those subjects actually this episode. Let's go with how you and Chris Crespo met up.
Okay, yeah. I started listening to Cinema Crespediso, a few years back, and we both kind of got enough listeners that I had heard of him and he'd heard of me, but we hadn't met. And then I'm trying to think when we first met. I don't remember, but we hit it off right away. Oh, yeah, I was a guest on the podcast. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And after that, it had pretty much gotten to the point where I was I had put myself in the running. He keeps good records. That I wanted to be the guest that has been on the most. Now it's not fair because I go over there like every other week and just pop in, so that doesn't really count. I used to go on there constantly. I loved that. He'd give away like the little at the end of the show. He used to give away these bags, like prize bags or whatever. And I have like a huge pile of those gift bags in my closet.
That's nice, man.
Yeah. I've already used a few. Like my mom's like, oh, do you have any of those things? Like my mom knows I have them now. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go get you a bag. Cool. For a present for something or other. Yeah.
What's in the grab bags?
Oh God. A lot of times like it's a burnt DVD and like, sometimes a toy that you get, like oftentimes people would get like a cap gun that you'd get at like CVS or something.
That's
like in
cool.
The toy. Yeah. Just little stupid little trinket kind of things, you know.
What and kind of burned CDs were on there?
Oh God, they were all movies. Mine was I now have a ripped DVD version of The Green Mile.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
How is that compared to the original version?
Pixelated.
Oh boy. And how many times have you appeared on Cinema Crespedizio before he considered working with you?
I think like 14 times. That's right. We were doing an episode of Crespediso, and afterwards I was like, yeah, man, I'm doing, this network thing, and I had two shows, and it was What's the Fuss and Tidbits, and I was like, but I can't do this myself. I cannot, bring up a network or whatever. And he's like, well, I'll do it with you. And like, it was one of those things. I don't know. I consider myself a pretty irresponsible person. Like, I would have asked him if I thought he'd have done it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I never like considered, hey, let's go in, as partners and create a network. Cause I figured he'd be like, what? No. So once he brought it up, I was like, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And we just started it.
Wow.
And it's been butter ever since. And you have a bunch of different shows that on PFT Media. What shows are they?
Oh, man. Okay. There is the ones that I do. I'll start with those because I don't produce all of them. What we have is we have like ones I produce in my studio, ones that Crespo produces in his studio. And then we do have a few podcasts that like they do it on their own. So yep. We don't even mess with it. Like they have their own studios. We're like, those are my favorites, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, they just keep going. I'm like, all right, cool. You just, it's like autopilot. But State of the Beer Union is one of the ones I produce. It's with Leslie Joe, and we had Ed on as the host. We just got Gina on. She's new, and Ed should be coming back at some point. But yeah, that's a beer podcast we have. Our interview podcast is Tidbits. That's me and Leslie.
Who's actually in the room with us.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Actually.
Who's sitting here on her laptop.
Yeah, just enjoying herself.
That's my driver.
Yep, hello.
I mean, it's my car, but she's the driver.
how nice of you.
But anyway, and then we had What's the Fuss, and then we dropped What's the Fuss. They are still a thing, but they're not affiliated with PFT anymore. They're on their own, but they are still coming out with new episodes.
Wow, what happened? Why did they stop being affiliated with PFT?
It was the longest running show that we had, and honestly, like there were just over a period of time, you know, you have things that don't get fixed, and you know, and you get into little squabbles and you get into little, you know, to the point where it felt like I knew it would be better because it's still alive. You know what I mean? So it was like, well, let's salvage this, you know, because I want it to continue running. But I have so many things on my plate right now that like I was just having panic attacks left and right. So I was like, I got to get rid of a show to have time to, you know, do my stuff or whatever. So it's good to see it's not gone. If you loved the show, I'm not on it, but it's everything else is the show. And yeah, just look up What's the Fuss. I'm assuming on iTunes, you know, it'll still come up.
One of the many platforms.
Yeah, exactly.
You do that. There's the Daily Caller, I'm guessing. I'm sorry if I'm getting
the Daily City?
Yeah, the Daily City. I'm so sorry I got that
wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, the Daily City is nice because it's. It's like 5 minutes long. I don't think there's ever been an episode that was more than 10 minutes long. And it's about what's going on around here. And I absolutely love it because it's, you'll hear about, new things that are coming into town. Like before signs are even up, you know, you see those signs where it's like this store coming soon or whatever.
Yes.
He researches all these things and finds out, you know, and goes, hey, by the way, in, you know, around this date, this new thing is going to be here. This committee in this, you know, like town or whatever is looking to make this law. And, you know, so it's all super local. It's fast news where it's just, he kind of gives you the quick and dirty. But it gives you like the, you know, the smaller amount of information that you get in the piecemeal. He always picks out the best details so that, you know, you feel like you got a good gist of the story. And if you're interested, look up more about it.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And we'll jump back to Tidbits. How'd that one come about?
That one came about because I wanted to do a show by myself, which turned out to be not the greatest idea. Because, you know, when you're busy, like, you know, when it's time to do a podcast, like, people come over, you know, and you're like, oh, well, it's time to do a podcast. Come on in, guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's... You just kind of go with it. When it's just you and you're like in bed because you're tired because you're off your schedule or something, you know, and you're like, oh, I have to record this podcast with just me today. You go, I'll do it next week. You know, like because you're not disappointing anybody or sending anybody home that drove all the way to your house or, you know what I mean? You're just like, it only affects me and I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Going back to eating cereal. So, you know, and so I brought in January, I brought on... Leslie.
Yes, the lovely Leslie.
He is. And that got things moving a lot better because, you know, again, like, you know, it'd be time to do Tidbits and she'd come over and it's like, she's over here, you got to do, you know what I mean? And I got back into that kind of thing about it. And since then, like, we've been messing around with it a lot like, we got a whiteboard. We're, like, constantly making notes on different things to talk about. And, like, we have office hours.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
So she is the yin to your yang, or the yang to your yin, would you say?
Oh, the first one, because I've never heard it the other way around.
Yeah, I know. We'll keep it traditional.
So, yeah, we ended up spending a lot of time on that. And it's definitely my favorite one because of that.
Yeah, it's, you said it's an interview-based podcast, right?
Yes.
How many interviews have you conducted so far?
Shoot, I don't even know. It's been around for 3 years. So,
safe to say a lot.
50 or something, I don't
know. Wow, actually. Yeah. That's impressive. Very good.
Well, and a lot of times, too, especially early on, one of the main things about it was really easy to get a guest because what I really liked about the interview process or whatever is that I would choose somebody that, and this sounds mean, but like wasn't special, you know, like they weren't a celebrity, even local, they weren't, you know what I mean, they're just an average person.
Yeah.
And the whole point was everyone has a story, so I'd have somebody come in and say, just come in ready to tell me a story. So they'd come in and tell me a story, you know, and kind of the whole point is, no matter who you are, you know, you have at least one story.
Yeah.
You know, even if you are truly a boring person, something has happened to you.
Exactly.
You know. And so it was really easy to book guests because it was like, hey, what's up, bro? You want to be on a podcast? Like being in a restaurant, be like, yeah. So the other day, hold on a minute. Hey. Like, you know, hey.
You want to be on that old trope?
Yeah.
It makes people feel good though.
It does. From the very beginning, Crespo and I kept talking about how, you know, we're like, we want to have shows that are all different, you know, because what's the point of just like, oh, we produce a lot of shows, like that's, you know, you're bragging, right, or whatever. So we were like, okay, there's certain podcasts that are, that type of podcasts that are really popular that it would make sense for us to have, you know, like, we don't have a wrestling podcast.
Really?
Wrestling podcasts are huge. You know, there's a lot of those. The number one most popular thing right now is the, you know, the true crime.
True crime.
True crime podcasts about serial killers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That is number one right now, most popular. Everybody's listening
to
those.
Do you or...
We don't have one of those.
No. So, okay. If anybody's trying to do that, please contact Steve.
Yeah. So, you know, and of course, you know, we did trivia podcasts. We do edutainment. It's Devils in the Details. You know, trying to cover everything.
Yeah.
You know, one show at a time. But, yeah, the only general talk ones we had is What's the Fuss? And that one's, you know, like I said, that one's gone. But I'm trying to think, what was the other? Oh, shoot, there was another one that was, I can't think right now.
That's all right.
But for the most part, they're themed. And that's what a lot of people, when they have problems, when they start a podcast and they're like, we're not, you know, getting anywhere and we can't. The big problem is if it's just one of those talking podcasts, it's you have to give a shit first, you know, because they're not coming up with information. It's joke, you know, me and my friends drinking beer and joking around. Well, I'm not your friend. So why am I, what's the appeal? Why do you think I should be listening? You know, and it's hard to prove that, you know, without listening to multiple episodes, and most people aren't going to do that. So it gets harder if you don't have some kind of theme to cling to.
Well, and how did you get into podcasting first? That's a question I've always wanted to know about you.
Yeah. In 2009, I think I was a video. I've been a video editor since 2001. And in 2009, I started listening to Tom and Dan. And after listening to a few episodes, you know, I was like, I want to make a song. So my friend Nick and I made a song for them, and we just figured, you know, they would like play it on, you know, and be like, oh, thanks guys for making that. That was cool. Whatever. And then, you know, so, you know, and then you get to go, yay, they played it, you know, they played it as their intro for about 80 episodes after that.
Like, whoa.
All, yeah, just for the longest time it was the intro, and that was... And me and Nick, you know, we were like, let's start a podcast soon after we made the song. So that's where I actually got to. I never got to where I never started out with no following. which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because as soon as we started the podcast, Tom and Dan announced on Tom and Dan, hey, by the way, if you like the intro song, that was Steve Vecchi and Bronco, and they just started a podcast, you should listen to it. And so we got a huge influx of listeners from the first episode. So, like, I never had to go through, you know, doing like three episodes of a show and seeing like zero downloads.
Yeah.
I got to skip that part.
Oh, wow. A lot. You got to skip the painful part.
Yeah, exactly. And it was great too, because finally I was like, you know what? I'm going to make a podcast. And I look up and I've got two microphones already because of my video editing and like all my equipment and stuff. And I was like, oh, well, most people go, oh, well, I've got to save up for equipment and da, da, da. I was like, oh, shit. I called up Nick. I was like, Nick, come over. We're doing a podcast, like, now. We just did it. I'm like, I have everything. Let's do it.
Nice. Was the first time at your house, or where was the first time you did a podcast at?
It was in my house, which was like this tiny office, and now I'm in one of the spare bedrooms. So, like, it's much, much bigger, which yeah. What I have now, there's no way it would fit in that old place.
Wow.
But yeah. And I mean, the studio that I have now is at my house. Like, I don't have a rented space for like an office or anything like that. I'd love that, though.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
but more money into it.
Yeah. At one point, I was shopping for one, and there was a barber shop for sale, and they still had all the chairs. And they had all of the sinks that with the divot in it so you can put your neck in there, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. And my dad goes, dude, you could fill all of those with ice and put beer in them. And I'm like, oh, my God, yeah. Like, I obsessed over this for, like, 2 weeks.
That actually would be cool.
How badass would that be?
It would be. You'd have to film that. It would be really cool.
Yeah. It would have been great.
Is that your plan since you have done were a videographer? Is that the right word I used?
Video editor.
Video editor. Would you want to soon film your shows?
No, not because then you'd have to do it on a weekly basis, and like keeping up with all of that would be. I am gonna do at some point for some of the shows, because it changes everything. If you do video, if you're doing it live. Now, you know, you have to say all to your podcasters, you know, where you go, look, when you get here, you have to get here now, because it's a live thing. Like, you can't be late. At this time, we start, you know, whereas without all of that, you know, and it's just an audio recording, it's like they're 15 minutes late and you're like, whatever.
Yeah, that actually brings me to my next question. How many co-hosts have you went through or troubled guests have you had?
Oh, troubled guests? Oh, yeah, God.
Like, you know, that you couldn't handle.
Oh, God. There was... only like four or five, but it's horrible when it happens. You know, one of them was one of my best friends.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, like, someone was a jerk to him, and he's just the type of guy with that attitude of like, you know what? I don't need this. I'm out of here. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And I was like, ah, crap. But
yeah, what it started.
It's so uncomfortable.
Started that episode there.
Yeah.
That whole situation between what happened exactly. If you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah, because I don't remember exactly. I think he said, like, you know, when somebody says something repeatedly and each time they say it they're trying to be funny but it's annoying and you're like, why do you keep saying that same punchline? You're freaking me out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're pissing me off. And the host just kept making fun of him over and over and over for the same thing, and like, you know, everybody else in the room is like, this is really they're like shrinking in their seats because they're going, are we recording this? Because I really don't want to have to admit this ever happened. This is horrible, you know.
Yeah.
So he had a pretty good reason for it, you know, but
yeah, which is understandable.
But it just, yeah, it's not when things get scary. It's when things get uncomfortable. That's what bothers me.
Yeah. How many uncomfortable situations like that has happened?
I've had times where, and unfortunately I can't think of anything in particular on this, but there have been some times where I might know the guest a little bit better and, you know, somebody on the show will ask the guest a question that I know the answer to, and I know they don't want to say the answer to it, and I can see them start to squirm a little bit. And, like, the person asking the question isn't being a dick. They don't know. They're not, you know, that they're asking anything of any significance. But you know what I mean? And I could just see the guest going, oh, and I just want to answer for them and make something up, you know? And they do, but then, you know, it does come across as genuine, and the person's like, "Are you lying?" And it gets weird. And again, that's what it is. Like, I would rather somebody jump over a table and dropkick somebody in the face than go through what I just described. Oh. You know, like, I'd rather call 911 and be like, "Hey, this isn't that bad," than
rather than a very uncomfortable situation. Wow, that I understand that, you know, how that feels sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and back to the co-hosts. How many co-hosts did you go through, or did you have any co-hosts before Leslie Joe?
I briefly had, this is weird, the tidbits is very strange. I was doing it as a one-man show kind of thing where I interview people, but then when we started to do the network, we came out with a bunch of shows right away, so, I said to Crespo, you know what, let's make Tidbits kind of like the network news thing, you know, and we did that for like two episodes. And then I did something. God, there was somebody I brought Bill on for a little while, a couple of years ago. And it went back to just me. And, you know, I just kept, you know, I don't know. It was just weird. It was a hard, weird fit.
Like, he wasn't really meshing with the chemistry and what you needed?
No, it was more like there's a lot of different moving parts with Tidbits of where we're going to record this here, and then it's going to go in between these two pieces of dialogue, and then we're going to have to create this piece of dialogue in which we announce the next, you know, clip, which we're then going to put on there. Now we're going to listen to the clip, and then we're going to comment on it. And, you know, it's a lot, you know, and because it's a lot more structured than, you know, just hit play and start talking. And it got to the point where, you know, I mean, the ratings on it were really low, because it was a weekly show, and it had gotten to the point where there were three or four different months that I only did one show in that month. And like the number one thing that can kill your podcast faster than anything else is not putting out content when you say you're going to. So if it's a weekly show and you don't put things out weekly, you're not only not going to grow your audience, it's going to dwindle. So I killed the hell out of it. And I knew that, you know, like I still didn't do it. And I was like, you know, that's why it was once a month. Every once in a while, I'd be like, you know what? I really feel like talking about this. So I'd just do that. But then finally I was like, you know, I want to make it more consistent. I want to build this back up. I cannot do that by myself because there's a lot of scheduling involved. And I suck at that.
Yeah.
And we'd been doing, Leslie and I had been doing State of the Beer Union together for quite some time, like 6 months. Yeah. You know, I was very comfortable with her on mic. We, you know, have a good go back and forth. We have a good rhythm. So I asked her to be on, and that's how we got where we are today. I got her on Tidbits, and that was 6 months ago. And I'll tell you, I got a lot of emails saying, "Hey, like, don't get me wrong. I've been listening to your show all along. I like listening to you. But since you got Leslie on, they're like, it's way better. You guys got great chemistry. She's funny. And you guys, da, 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 you know, just kind of going back and forth and that." So between from the time that she has come onto the show to now, our ratings have more than quadrupled.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. I picked the right person.
Yes, you did. Now, the format of the show, did that come before you put out the show, or did that mature over time as you were progressing with the show?
I did like a bare bones deal. Basically, what I did was I want to start the show off by me talking, "Oh, hey, this is episode da-da-da. I am your host. Thanks for listening, blah, blah, blah." And then I will have already done, you know, an interview, and I'll go, "Well, here's, I interviewed so-and-so, and here's what they had to say about this." And then I do like a transition noise or whatever, and then I put the interview in there. And this is pretty much what we do now, where at the beginning of the episode, it's me and Leslie talking about, "Oh, well, how are you this week? What happened to you? Da da da." We have a 5-minute chat, and then we go, "Well, we interviewed so and so about this. Take a listen." And then it goes into the interview, and then it'll cut back out after 10-15 minutes, and it'll be us again going, "Okay, so that was his story. Man, you know when the da-da-da-da-da," and we have a conversation about what just took place in the interview, and we go, "Well, that was really interesting. Now, he told us about his hobby after that, and he likes to do this. Let's hear about that." Go back into it. So it's like, it's us two by ourselves, but also us with somebody we're interviewing, depending on when you're listening to the show, you know. So we get to interview people, but then we also kind of get to have fun behind the mic with just us two, which is a great thing to have, to be able to do both.
Yeah, to just be able to have the chemistry that you have going. And yeah. About your interviews, I wanted to ask, who was a very significant interview for you to have on?
I'm actually going to tell you about one that hasn't happened yet.
Okay, well, please do.
Yeah, on June 19th, Leslie and I are going to be interviewing Daniel Dennis.
This is June 19th, 2019.
Yes.
Yes.
Which, like, they're all, like, we record and release. So, like, we're going to interview Daniel that day. But on the 19th, if you download a Tidbits episode, it's going to be the one before that. You're going to have to wait a week until you actually hear the Daniel Dennis episode. So it would be the 26th.
I'm guessing the audience, you know, that are listening would have already listened to it since we are already, you know, it's February of 2020 now.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So they probably already had a chance to listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in the future already, people.
I was going to say, you're going to have to backlog a bit.
A little bit.
I hope.
Yeah, so they will. It would have, that episode probably would have came out long before this episode would come out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is interesting. Tell us more about that one now.
Which one?
Your latest interview on the 19th. Is there any more going into it? How did you come about this interview?
Well, I love this interview because, I mean, both Tom and Dan are extremely hard to get a hold of. Not hard to get a hold of, but, you know, they're very busy. So if you, you know, say like, oh, hey, I'd like to interview you or whatever, you know, it's hard to find a time. Like, you know.
Yeah.
We went through like 3 or 4 weeks trying to find the right, you know, before we settled on the 19th.
That is cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, I have a lot to talk to him about because, you know, I was just over the years, I wanted to know things, you know, like, you know, of all the events that they've had, like, what was their favorite one or what was their favorite moment from one of their events, you know, because, I mean, I went to the first one. If you go to a Tom and Dan event now, you'll see more than 500 people.
Wow.
I went to the first one ever in 2009, and there were 20 people there. That was awesome.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Yeah, how was that?
It was incredible. It was at a sandwich shop. It was at 903 Mills.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, I mean, now, you know, you go to like Tinder downtown. That's what it is called, right? Tinder or Ember.
Ember.
I knew it was some kind of flame thing.
Steve Etchie was looking for Leslie Joe for information.
Like, Leslie, psst. But it was Ember, and Ember is a big location. Now, I mean, they fill out huge downtown. Like, they filled out Hard Rock Live. But
that is
the
really
first
wild.
One. It was a sandwich shop.
Started from the bottom. Now they're at Hard Rock.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I love those. You know, I have like the first stickers they ever put out. Like, I'm like, I bet you they haven't even seen those stickers in years. And I have those.
What did the stickers look like back then?
Oh my God, they were all black and white. Like, you know, it was very. They weren't bad, like, you know what I mean, but like, you know, they were much simpler.
Yeah,
you know, like way simpler. And not too much imagery, really. There's one with a little like shapeless guy, like, I don't know, bubble looking guy, and he's got like a big stab with a cleaver, and his, you know, and it says I survived. I don't know, but it was the 10th annual murder and pee orgy. Murder and pee orgy with Tom and Dan.
Wow, what is that? I want to know more about that.
And it's now on my Zoom recorder box, which I didn't think. Hey, I might professionally go record for somebody else, you know, that's not gonna like to see that. But whoops, whatever.
Wow. So the pee and murder.
The
fest?
Pee and murder orgy.
What's that about?
No. I don't know. They just made it up.
What do they do there?
Like, yeah, I mean, a lot of their stuff was from you know, stuff that people calling in would say. You know, like, they had one with a sticker with a cherub on it. You know, that said Tom and Dan, like an angel pissing in your ear.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it's good stuff. So I mean, you know, they had those old stickers, and I mean, those are 10 years old. I actually, when I placed them on my Zoom recorder, I was like, half expected when I pulled the paper off that it just wouldn't even stick to anything, you know. but they ordered from somewhere nice.
Wow, glue's still working and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez, we're gonna switch gears here actually now, and we're gonna talk about the early lives of Steve Etchie.
Oh no, okay.
Yes, if you're comfortable.
Yeah, you know I am.
How was the life of Steve Etchie? Where did you grow up?
I grew up right around here. I grew up in Castleberry.
Really?
Yeah, and I currently live in Winter Springs. So, I moved one zip code over. but yeah, I've always lived here. I love it here. It'd be weird to live anywhere else, honestly.
Yeah?
Yeah. I like it because I still will, be in the grocery store and, see somebody and be like, I knew them in kindergarten. Because I remember really early on people.
Yeah.
Not so much from college and stuff, but if you go, oh, did you know this person first grade or something? I'd be like, let me think. I'd be like, yeah, I know their first, their last name, what their hobby was, who their friends were. But they're like, well, how well did you know them? I didn't really.
No.
But I know all those things. I don't know why. I just paid more attention at the time. I don't
know.
Yeah. So, that's kind of what I liked about my childhood the most was that my parents were also wonderful, but
yeah.
I stayed in the same place. I made friends. I tended to keep my friends all throughout school, while gaining more others, So I never had that feeling of, if I moved to San Francisco or something where I'd be like, this is weird. When I look around, I don't know anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a weird feeling to me. I usually recognize somebody.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with you on that. Well, that's pretty cool. That's actually really awesome. And that brings me to the next question. What's on your bucket list?
On my bucket list? Shoot, that's not the same as my dream. Because my dream is to actually, make a living off of the network
Yeah.
Comfortable enough,
yeah,
live off of what you want to do kind of deal.
Yeah,
I think every artist has that. It's really cliche at this point, but it's because it's true.
It is. There it is. Yeah, I agree.
but definitely now I'm trying to think, as far as bucket list goes, it's gonna be the traveling to places, because I'd never gone anywhere traveled much of it. I've gone up the east of the country. East coast, damn it. But I've probably seen seven states. But then I went international for the first time in February. I went to China, and since then I'm I want to travel here.
Wow.
Started going nuts, because once you do that first, you can't believe, you walk off the, plane and you look up in the sky and you're like, I'm on the other side of the world. That's mind blowing.
That sort of is. You're in China too. Tell me about that.
Oh my God. Not everybody, when they go on vacation, goes to a different country. A lot of people, they go, oh, I'm going to visit New York City and I'm going to see the, I almost said Liberty Bell. the Statue of Liberty, so you're going to a different portion of your own country. Well, what I didn't realize is that, obviously, China's huge, so they're doing that too. There's people that are saving up for a vacation in a remote village where it's just Chinese people. There's no reason for you to go visit where they are at all. So they're just visiting Beijing, because they've always wanted to go,
Right.
And so a lot of these people, I've only seen their village, and this is them, in the big city. And when they see you, they stop doing whatever they're doing. I saw a guy that noticed that I was there and immediately, fixed his eyes on me and tripped over something because I'm white.
Okay.
These people have never seen a white person before.
Okay, that's interesting to know.
Which makes me think of Eminem every time I say that. But it just happened. By the end of the trip, I was there for 2.5 weeks, and multiple times a day, every day, we're, going out being tourists ourselves, and we'll have a group, a family, come up, and they'll just kind of point to me, and then point to all of them, and then show, their camera or whatever, and I'll be like, oh, they want me to take a picture, No. They make a Chinese person hold the camera. They want me in the picture.
Oh, wow.
I was in, 70, different family pictures for no reason. Like, it's just them, like, we're on vacation. It's me, like, I don't know why I'm here.
Wow.
And they just, they stare at you like they're at Disney and they just saw, like, some kind of visual effect that they do. You know what I mean? Like, they do sometimes in theme parks where you're like, whoa.
Like, wow.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, my God, Whitey. You know, and you're just like, hi.
Wow. That's a, that's enlightening.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
They look at you with a look of, especially the children have this look of absolute shock. Like you're a, like you're a Tom Cruise. And they're just like, oh, my God, I've seen you in movies, except... Oh my God, you're a white guy.
That is very.
Oh, it's the best part of going.
I bet it is. You feel like a little celebrity.
Oh yeah, I would go just for that.
And what other things did you do while you were in China?
Well, I really just wanted to see a lot of it. I wanted to see the culture. I wanted to go to the bars, walk around the cities. You know, because China, like, they have so much money now. You know,
really?
Like they have, yeah, because you know, they're the like the big economic power. So like, you'll see, you know. Okay, say you see something that's like a skyscraper looking thing, you know, and you're like, you know, wow, this is, this looks like, you know, if it were here, it'd be downtown Orlando or something like where that would be.
Right.
That's where the highest buildings would be. Okay. In Beijing or Shanghai or any of those, the equivalent of Orlando downtown would be skyscrapers like crazy.
Yeah.
But then, like, what would you say the next biggest would be? Like, Altamont?
Yeah, like Altamont.
It'll be exactly
town.
The same. Skyscrapers all over.
Not so many skyscrapers in Altamont, I believe.
No, but I mean, this is their equivalent.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah,
it's literally like, oh, where are you in, you know, Opkahumka? Oh, Skyriser. Like, it doesn't matter. There are 50-story buildings freaking everywhere. Like, it would be like having those buildings in Pine Hills. Like, you'd be like, why is this place fancy? This place isn't supposed to be fancy. What's going on?
Yeah.
It's just everywhere. You know, like, I'm pretty sure if I were to drive, like, you know, when you go on the highway and there's just like trees as far as you can see for like when you're driving a Tampa or something like that.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, it's like that with skyscrapers the entire time you're driving to wherever you're driving.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that a little intimidating? Or?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, every place that I went to that wasn't even a main strip of the city made, what's that in New York? With all the lights, you know.
I'm not familiar.
What's the New York City... No. The street with the lights.
We're currently asking Leslie Joe for help.
No. No, where all the screens are and, like, Elmo is. Thank you.
Madison
I
Square.
Couldn't think. Thank you. Yes.
I think yeah.
Like, you could go to some place that's, in the, like, off of the city that's, like, not even that special.
Yeah.
And it will have at least one street that makes the Times Square look like shit.
Really?
For no reason. There's just people hanging out in it, and you're like, this is your just, like, your neighborhood? Like, what is going on? Like, there's lights and, like, all these crazy, yeah. And
wow.
And they turn them off really early, too.
Really?
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's 11 o'clock. And they just, like, shut the lights on all the buildings. Like, I was using one as a landmark. I was like, okay, my hotel's right by that building that has, like, a video playing, like, on 30, 40-store building, you know?
Right.
And I was like, you can't miss that, you know?
Yeah.
A couple hours later, I came back, somebody shut it off. I was like,
what happened?
Know where I am. Like, everything was pitch black. So it's like, it could be the city that never sleeps, like New York, but it's not. If you go at like 2 a.m. and you go out there, nobody's out there. It's the culture. They're going to bed.
Yeah. You know, we have things to do. You know?
Yeah.
All this, you know, takes manpower to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Person power. I'm sorry.
I like the idea that it's literally just an on off, like flip to like turn that entire side of the building off.
That is, you eventually find that.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. We would need one here just for jokes.
Yeah.
So how long were you there?
I was there for 2.5 weeks, and I don't even remember all the cities I went to, but it was absolutely incredible. And this is the weirdest part. My sister found this. It was a Groupon deal for our tickets to fly there for all the tourist stuff like, because we had guides and stuff like that, which you really need, because it's not like if you're like in a Spanish speaking country or something where a lot of times a lot of people speak English anyway. Yeah. Nobody speaks English. So you're pretty screwed. So you do need a tourist guide. So the flight there and back, the tourist guide, the two flights I took within China to go to different, all that kind of stuff. So like I got continental breakfast. So breakfast is always taken care of. And they supplied us with lunch and dinner every day, $600 a piece.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, my sister and I were literally on the plane, like, this is either going to be, like, the trip of a lifetime, or we're being sold into slavery.
Oh, no. They're just fattening us up.
Yeah. We're like, I'm not sure. How much of a scam is the question. But
oh, boy.
It ended up working out. That number is crazy.
Yes, that is a crazy number. 600 a night?
Yeah, for that whole 2.5 weeks, everything taken care of, $600.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it was a 20-hour flight.
Wow, 20 hours.
Yeah, they put you in a plane that gives you a little bit more room, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I started feeling weird when I went from, like, what was it? When we were within the country and we were just flying for, like, 3 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
So you had the smaller plane. That was, you know, kind of... I was kind of, I get a little, because, you know, I feel like I don't have any space, you know, and, but like the ones you actually fly over the ocean, they're much bigger. It's not nearly that bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty nice to know, you know, and how did it change you in any way, that trip? Did it like affect you, calm you, or what did it do for your total person?
Oh, man, I think it calmed me, actually, because, I mean, not that I was wily. But constantly coming in contact with people where it got to the point where, you know, I would come up to a person just like ready with my charade. You know, yeah. I'm like, I got this. This is gonna be fun. And but, you know, we'll both look at each other and smile because we both kind of smile and nod that kind of. We don't know what each other is saying at all, but we're going to figure this out. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
And everybody has a great attitude about it. Like when there's a misunderstanding, when I'm like, oh, that, what, you know, like what he's saying, he realizes I'm not getting it, you know, like start laughing and I start laughing. It's like, ha, I'm an idiot. You know, but I mean, like, it's one of those things where you're now joking around literally with people you don't know that you don't even speak each other's language. But you're kind of trying to figure out what each other is saying, even though usually what I have to say is not important. I want to know where ice cream is.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
It's not like what's 911 in Chinese. Like,
right.
No, I just I have a dumb question.
Yeah, where's the ice cream?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it helped out with like social anxiety. Right?
Yeah, definitely. And because I felt fine walking up to them because they'd get wide-eyed like, holy shit. I mean, it was the majority of the people that I came across, if they weren't impressed when they saw me, they hadn't seen me yet.
That is actually okay.
Yeah, and I learned something
so
else.
So that's an easy, you know, filter right
there. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you haven't met me yet.
Yeah, well, and I accidentally learned something that if you don't like that, because some people, you know, they don't want that type of attention, you know, like, oh, no.
Right.
You know, I've got a 3/4 sleeve. But it was cold out, so I was always wearing long sleeves.
Right.
So I accidentally discovered this. There were people that were like, that thought it was cool, you know, like they saw me with long sleeves on and were like, oh my God, look, and I'm like, hi, you know, and I went back to the tourist bus and I took my shirt off cause it was starting to warm up a bit.
Right.
I was feeling good. So I had a short sleeve shirt underneath and I walked back off the bus, walked the same path through, you know, walking by the same 24 people or so.
Right.
And everybody, only a little bit, just kind of moved a little bit away and would not, like, look or smile at me. They didn't look visibly afraid, but they looked like this is something that they do because they feel they might be afraid because, like, it's just, as soon as they can see that you have tattoos,
yeah.
They don't look disappointed or, you know, or, you know what I mean? Or give you a stink eye or anything like that. But it's more of like, oh, is this guy okay? You know, right. This is like, wow, oh my God, this is like America in the 80s.
My goodness. So the culture, they're not used to tattoos, mm-hmm. right? No?
No. Which isn't a big surprise, because, I mean, I know they share, there are a bunch of different traits that the Chinese and the Japanese share, mostly because they're so close to each other and everything.
Right.
And, you know, I was talking about how, like, man, if I ever went to Japan, I would love to go to one of the bathing houses. With like the pools and stuff, you know.
Oh
what
yeah,
right?
Those.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I can't go.
Why?
Because if you're in Japan and you have tattoos, you are not allowed to go in.
Really?
Because of the Yakuza.
Oh.
The Yakuza are solely associated with tattoos in Japan, and they don't want to serve the Yakuza. So it's almost like you walking into a bar with a bandana with a certain, like, gang color. But, right. like, it's a coincidence you're not in that gang. You know right. what I mean? But they still go, dude, you got to put it away. It's like that, to where right. they're like, we know you're not Yakuza. It's quite obvious, actually. You know?
Yeah.
But, like, we're not letting you in.
Yeah, we can't open the door.
Yeah, so I was afraid China might have, like, something similar, because you never know.
Yeah, you know, you want to be culturally aware.
And a bathhouse seems like a place that might have some kind of sanctimonious thing like that, you know?
Right, you know, because, you know, again, you don't exactly know what their culture's like.
Exactly.
Which is really telling of how, you know, how stark our two cultures are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and how would you describe it?
Oh, my God, I can give you a perfect example right away, the New Year.
Okay.
Oh, my God, I was there for, it was funny, I was here for our New Year, and then I was there for Chinese New Year, and I was like, does that make me 38? I'm like, I got two New Years in 1 year. But they celebrate it for, like, a week, and it is a huge, huge thing. It's, like, compared to the New Year for China, the New Year here is like, oh, it's the New Year, isn't it? Could you could you light those fireworks? And then they go off and you go, all right, cool, let's go watch TV.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, we love fireworks. That's it. These people party and go all sorts of places. Bars were closed because it was New Year. I'm like, wait a minute.
Really?
What?
Wow, that's when you expect them to be open.
I was like, I thought they'd be open later because of the New Year. Yeah, but I mean, like, I went to like 5 bars because that was the particular time. I was like, I want to do the bar experience, and it was the New Year, and I went to like 5 different bars. It wasn't until the 6th bar that it was open that I was like, God, what in the world? They're like, oh, it's the New Year. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
So it's this is more boring of a New Year here than they go all out.
Oh, yeah. Like, decorations all over. I mean, decorations to the point that, like, you know when you go to, like, a fancy, like, square or something? Like, you know, like in Winter Park Village or something like that. During Christmas when they put, you know, like, there's just Christmas, like, everywhere just decked out totally.
Yeah.
Okay, they kill that in New Year's stuff. Just everywhere, like, big, impressive, just, you know, stuff that's stuck to a building. Like, it looks like an art installation, and it's taking up 2 floors of a building,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
And it's Peppa Pig.
Peppa Pig?
I don't know why they're obsessed with Peppa Pig.
Really?
There are statues of Peppa Pig I've seen, like, 5 or 6 in different places, in different cities, that were all taller than me. Peppa Pig, for no reason. It was not a Peppa Pig store. It was not like a children's playground. It was just like, oh, somebody just installed a Peppa Pig thing here. Okay. Like, just,
okay, cool. Right there. You know, we don't have no Peppa Pig things anywhere here. Matter of fact, you would say America's more corporate in a way than cultural.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and when you came back, like, were you embittered or were you just more appreciative of where you came from?
Everything I learned, I loved. Mostly because even the bad things that I learned, I still, like, I saw things that were not good, but they were interesting to me. I'll give you a perfect example. I didn't even realize, you know, my dad was like, oh, you got to get, like, those belts that you put in a weird place on your body that holds your cash so that you don't get pickpocketed. Okay. When we got there, we realized the tourist people, they go, look, they're like, if you see a camera, there's probably, like, Or no, if you don't see any cameras, that's what they go. Look around right now. Do you guys see any cameras? And we were outside, and we were like, no. And I said, okay, that means that there are probably 3 to 4 cameras that are currently recording you that you can't see. And they said, if you're walking somewhere and you see 1 or 2 cameras, there are probably 10 or 11 cameras nearby that have you on video at all times, out in a back alley, like in a field. It doesn't matter. They are absolutely everywhere. But because of that, what I realized and thought was cool, and again, this is cool, but not worth this. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I mean, there was, I could throw my backpack on the ground in the street, like just like up against a building or whatever. Come back an hour later, it'll be there. Nobody wants to do shit. Like, I mean, if you do something there, like, you know, you're punished severely for, you know, for breaking the law, and you can't get away with it. All their cameras have facial recognition. Like, they know all of their citizens. If you were to steal my backpack, well, not you, because have you in the system.
As an example.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if somebody stole my backpack, by the time I realized it was gone, they'd be like, this guy had your backpack. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So you, like, it turns out, like, you could walk down an alley, you know, like, that you can't see anything, because nobody's going to jump you.
That's amazing.
Because all the cameras have infrared, too.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
That's actually not expensive and not... Almost all security systems do have.
That's pretty, yeah. but pretty cool. The end result is that.
But again, that's way too big, brother. But when you like, I appreciated that. I actually got to see the positive effect of that, even though I would never do it because I think it's too negative. But the positive aspect of it is just so huge, you know. Like, you know, same way that they can move things around so fast. Like when there's this city that was, it's been around for like 2000 years or something. And it's got a big wall around just the city, and it's a very large wall. And they started to think, you know, China started to think, you know what, like we should make this entire city for tourists. And that, you know, nobody lives in the city anymore. They'll live outside the city. Well, here's the thing. China owns all the land. So they go to the others. Now, this ends up being a good deal, though. Basically, China goes, okay, yeah, that's what we want to do. So that's what we're going to do. So they go to everybody and go, look, in the next couple of years, all you guys are going to, we're going to be moving you out of your houses and outside the city walls. But we are giving you a house of equal or greater value. You know, like, it's a good deal.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's just the fact that they can do it in one fell swoop because they own the land, whereas, you know, the U.S. government, like, we would have to try to talk to people into letting, you know, the government buy their property from them so they could get rid of their... No. Government, now we own this. We're moving you. And, you know, you don't have anything to say about it.
Yeah.
You know... and to me, though, like doing that fat, like that's efficient as hell. Worth it? Again, no. But seeing that in action was incredible. You know, that you can see how quickly a government can move when they have so much control.
Right. And would you say, how did that affect your view of American government? We're going to get a little political.
You know what? It's funny. I thought that I would come back appreciating, like, America more. I didn't appreciate it less by any means.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird to say because, like, I might even, like, if somebody would, like, oh, would you live in China? For a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I would be up for it. I can see staying there for a while, sure.
Yeah.
You know, but I see it as kind of an in the middle thing because, you know, although I love seeing how fast, like, the Chinese government can get things done that they want to get done, you're just like, whoa, you know, you can still appreciate that, you know, the only reason the USA can't is because we, you know, have our freedoms that would otherwise be overrun by that. But at the same time, I look at the US and because of what a well-oiled machine China is, I do look at the U.S. and go, okay, this isn't because of the type of government we are. Right. We're just really slow and don't give a shit.
Yeah.
you know, but I didn't necessarily come home being like, you know, like, we need to be more like China, or you know what I mean? You know, I never went that far, but you know, so it's rather than saying, oh, I think it's cool or good, Chinese way of doing things, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. Would you say the American media has somewhat of a misconception about China?
I think everybody does, because if you go there, I don't know. There were so many things that, like, I expected and things I didn't expect. But it's just one of those things that even if you see a video of, like if you go up to Montana and you take a video of the sunset over the mountains and shit.
Yeah.
Okay. You can show it to me, but I didn't go there, and that makes all the difference in the world, even though I am seeing it.
Right.
On video. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a different thing.
You have to go over there. You really do. Even though a lot of things, while I was walking down the street, I didn't see anything happening that I thought, oh my God, that I was totally shocked. Like, there was no, you know, nothing crazy.
All right.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty much, yeah.
Just like how you described it.
Yeah.
You know? No one wants to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an interesting dichotomy between China and America, you know, and they're the biggest suppliers, right, for the world.
Yeah.
Right. And how, like how is the landscape as far as, you know, China? Like, what's the difference in the look of China versus America?
Oh, okay. They have different ways of doing buildings. Like, a lot of them look kind of similar. Because, I mean, you know, how a lot of tall buildings are, like, you know, especially apartment buildings, you know, it's just, like, square window. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But, you know, they had some unusual stuff. They had the IBM building, which was curved like a dragon.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. And it was IBM. And so, I mean, like, but that's just, like, you know, even in America, when you run across a building that's famous because it's different. I can't even think of.
Like, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
The Sears Tower. I don't. I don't know. Well, even those are just skyscrapers, but yeah. You know. But yeah. And now they're very much into that whole neon signs and, like, you know, screens, outdoor screens that are like multiple stories high.
Right. Really? You know. That's interesting.
Yeah. Very flashy. You know.
So everything pops right at you.
Something I would see, like, honestly, I could see at nighttime in any of those cities, if there were a whole bunch of cars that showed up, like ricers, you know?
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh my God, we're in Tokyo Drift. Like, that's what it looks like. That is what it looks like. Like,
really?
Lots of lights everywhere. And then, of course, you know, the street lights and the traffic lights.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the advertisements. Again, very Times Square-ish, you know?
Yeah.
All kinds of just lights everywhere.
That's freaking.
It has that kind of thing going on for
it. Yeah. And is that going to inspire this trip? Is that going to inspire a new podcast, like a travel podcast, you would say?
If I could travel often enough that I could keep up with the content, hell yeah. but I mean, you know, it took me 36 years to do that. So.
Right.
but yeah, in the meantime, I'm just trying to, like, you know, not tell, like, the same China story twice. It's hard because so much happened and I loved it.
I'm glad to hear that. And we'll bounce from a point I want to touch upon. If you're comfortable, is about the social anxiety part from the story. Tell me about that. What you have social anxiety, you say. Well, how long have you known you've had that?
Oh, no, I don't. It's that I was just saying, like, if other people do. When I was talking about the tattoo thing, like, if you have social anxiety and you have tattoos, take your shirt off and nobody will bother you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm quite the opposite. I want to talk to absolutely everybody. I tried to talk to so many Chinese people, knowing full well it wasn't possible.
Right.
But, you know, like, every once in a while, you just got to turn around and go, hey, what's up, man?
Yeah.
And they're just, like, looking at you like, you know?
Oh, that's funny, isn't it? So you don't have any issues at all?
No.
No?
No. And and on a quick note, if you ever take the subway in Shanghai, like, seriously, if you are like, you know, on the platform waiting, you know, and you're eating a sandwich and you drop that sandwich on the floor, you can still eat it. It is that clean.
Really?
Yes. Like, you could, I walked down to this Subway, and we were, and like, the car had just left. We're like, oh, we're going to have to wait for the next one, you know? And I just looked down, and I was like, oh, my God, I could lick this floor. Like,
nice.
It was, everything looked insanely like somebody just cleaned and then hid as I came in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, that's the only way it could have been this clean.
Wow. Yeah. That is really freaking cool.
I expected that more of like, and it is true also, but like Japan are, you know, they're the ones that are known for like everything is theirs is extremely clean, you know? So like, that's what I would have expected there, but I didn't, you know, but yeah,
You've been to Japan, too.
No, I would love to go.
Yeah?
Yeah, especially since while in China, you're, like, looking at the map, and, I mean, you're just, like, you can see Japan right off the coast of China, you know, and you're like, ah, I bet I could swim there. You know, like, yeah. Like, I want to go.
It's right there.
But I don't think the tourists would...
I don't think they would appreciate it.
Would like me to do that, yeah.
No, you know, and the tour guide would probably freak out.
Yeah, of course, it actually turns out that's not the case. They're like, well, because we had somebody, like, show up, like, not, like they were late by, like, 30 minutes, you know? And they're like, well, they'll have to find their way back to the hotel. We're going over to da-da-da-da, and we just continue walking. I'm like, holy shit. Wow. Like, I was kind of scared for the rest of the tours. I was like, I'm not getting left behind.
No, I'm going to stay with this guy. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is really crazy, man.
Although, I'm pretty sure I could have gone home with, like, a Chinese family. Like, I'd be like, I'm cute, right? Can I go with you guys?
Adopt a Etchy.
Yeah, exactly.
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 And I'll ask... probably one more question. It's a question I've asked everybody I've interviewed so far, and I've gotten a little better at asking it because at first it was really tough.
Nah.
Why should we personally care about what you're doing?
Because your show's on my network.
Yes.
True. We talked about that on the way here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's going to be my answer.
Yeah, that's the answer. You already knew it was coming then. I like to this ain't about me, so shut up, Chris. All right. With that said, this has been another episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. Do you want to say any last things, Etchy?
No, except just, you know, that I'm absolutely loving what I'm here coming through.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I have stuff come through even when I haven't worked on it. Like, it's just been like, oh, yeah, by the way, here's this. You know, like I'm working on the promo right now that you got video that you guys did.
Yeah.
Like, I really like the look and the feel and the sound of what you guys are doing.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
You know, coming from, you know, one of my bosses, you know, and a good friend as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Etchy, for being on my show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And y'all have a great night.
Go, but right now I know there's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here.
The Experience with Chris Fio is produced by Boris Douglas Garvey and Kyle Eagle. It is a joint production of Borma, Vonti, and PFT Media. The theme song is You and Me by NWAR Superstar.
A PFT Media production.